to play in the Super Bowl against the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Vernon hands the Lynch left side. Finds a little bit of a hole. Keeps his leg moving. He's across the 40. Midfield. 45. He's on the run, Lynch. 40. Pushes him at 35. Look at him go. He's down to 20. 15. He could go. He is going to go. Touchdown, Seahawks. Oh, my word. A 67-yard run. Marshawn Lynch. Unbelievable. The beast is alive and well.
Wide receivers to either side. Russell takes the snap. He drops back.
To the middle. It's intercepted. Going the other way. He's out across the 30, the 40, midfield, down the far sideline. Is he going to outrun everybody? He is. It's Bobby Wagner from the goal line. 99 yards. He lays down in the end zone. Somebody bring him oxygen.
It has been decided maybe since the safety in the first quarter. 12, they're bringing the trophy home. Your Seahawks Super Bowl 48 champion.
Welcome back, ladies and gents, to the We Talk Seahawks Rookie Watch podcast. We are coming in hot off the back of a great victory over the Lions, which we're all very happy about. And we've seen some stellar contributions from our rookies and second year players. And me and James are here to bask in the glory and talk about some very positive stats and takes on those performances. James, how are you, pal?
Yeah, I'm good, mate. I'm good. I'm a lot better this week. Like I say, I've fallen back in love with football again. I was right down in the doldrums after week one. But that thrilling overtime win has got the juices flowing again, shall we say, Mitch. So I'm looking forward to Rookie Watch this week and week three. And hopefully we can keep talking about our rookies doing well.
Yeah, and I think we've had some much more meaningful contributions from them. I think some of them are starting to look a lot less like rookies and more like rotational or starting pieces in this team. And I think that's a great thing for us to kick off with. We'll start with the bad stuff. We'll just cover a couple of injuries and players that are on the injury list for ahead of our game against the Panthers this weekend. I think the big bit of news, which I'm particularly disappointed about, is Mike Morris's season ender. From what I understand, it was the same injury that he had coming out of last season in college that right. they thought he'd got past, and he'd been on he'd missed a few bits of the preseason, I think. And I believe it's to do with an AC joint in his shoulder, but they have decided to operate and sort that out with a means to getting him fully fit and ready for next year, and so that can just be dealt with, which is probably a sensible, if not boring, solution for the sake of seeing what we drafted, really. But what's your take on that? Have you seen good things out of Morris recently?
Yeah, I'm really disappointed with this one. Like I said, I think in the main pod coming off the back of the Lions game, we sort of waxed lyrical a little bit on Mike Morris and how good he looked in the run defense and even week one. I thought he stood out in week one in terms of players that came out of the game with credit against the Rams. I thought he was definitely in that conversation as well. So he's had a really, really good start to his rookie season for, like I say, a guy who's been asked to become a different kind of athlete, play a different position. And I thought he was taken to it really well. So I'm really, really disappointed with this. But like you say, if he's injured and he's not going to be back till the end of the season, then just get the surgery done now and get the problem ironed out now. So like I say, once the season's done and training camp rolls back around for next season, he's ready to fully go for that. And we don't have to worry about, when do we do the Morris surgery? Is he still going to have lingering problems kind of thing? Just get it done now so we can have a full preseason at it next season. But yeah, it's going to leave a bit of a hole on our run defence that hopefully we can pick the sack up from.
It's a shame. One of the benefits is that we've not really, or one of the good things is that we've not really used too many linemen in a lot of our looks in weeks one and two. We've averaged about, I think it was 1.9 linemen per defensive formation while playing a 3-4 supposedly. So we haven't been using a particularly lineman-heavy set of formations. So, you know, we're probably not lacking in numbers there with the current squad. Look, from looking at it, I think they were staring down the barrel of Morris playing a game, missing a game, playing a game, missing a game all season. I mean, he hasn't played two games in a row for us since we drafted him. So clearly that was something that maybe they thought they could play through this year and fix in the off season. And they've just said, okay, this isn't going to work. We're going to make it worse, or it could become, you know, a niggly kind of thing that keeps coming back. So they've obviously just kind of decided to do that, which is, like you say, a bit of a shame, but I think we'll be okay, numbers-wise. Mm-hmm. McIntosh, we're not hearing an awful lot, actually, on time frame for that.
No, I think it's going to be after the bye, from what I understand about it. I don't think he's going to be back before the bye, because I think, is he on injured reserve? I'm not even sure if he's on injured reserve. I think he's just, I'm not sure what they've done with him.
I don't think he went on injured reserve. But
no, I have a feeling that it's going to be after the bye week that we're going to see McIntosh for the first time. There's no need to run him back and risk him back at this moment in time when we've got Walker and Charbonnet and Dallas playing well. So, yeah, after the bye week.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think we picked up a bit of a luxury there when we took him so late. We took him because he was he represented great value. It wasn't a position of need for us to roll into the season with four players that can play wide receiver. Well, we got two that could play wide receiver, sorry, running back one, and two that could probably play running back two for most teams in the league. So we're spoiled in terms of depth anyway. It's not, but from my perspective, I just want to see him play and see what he's made of, you know. Yeah. So, and then looking at our second year players, Cross is day to day, could play against the Panthers, but I think we're all expecting him not to.
Yeah.
And also the way the tackles played in the last game, I don't think we're all feeling quite as desperate to rush him back either. So, any take on that with the tackles? You think we're less likely to rush back Cross, or?
No, I don't think so. I think if we'd have crashed and burned at the weekend against the Lions and Forsyth and Curran had looked as horrendous as a lot of people thought they were going to look, then they might have tried to rush Cross early. You know, being 0-2, you don't want to go 1-3. You know, you've got to start turning your season around at that point. So I think they would have rushed him back and maybe took the risk with him. But no, I think, like I say, we talked about in the Lions pod, the way they utilised the blocking with the tight ends, and from the protection that Stone and Jake gave them, I think they're more than happy to look at that and go, well, if we can go into Detroit and beat the Lions in Detroit with them, we can win against the Panthers at home. So we don't need to risk it.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, that's all the injury issues we have, really, I think, in terms of obviously Abraham Lucas on IR, but we know that he's back. I don't think he makes it back off IR for the Bengals game. I think it's the game after. But either way, he's out of sight and out of mind for now. We know we're without him, and he can just focus on getting better from his surgery. I did hear that he'd reported that his knee was already feeling far better following the surgery. I know Pete Carroll had been talking about that being a really positive surgery, and that ongoing pain that he'd had for quite a long time was already better, even with the soreness of having the surgery. So that does sound like it was worth just, again, like the Morris thing, just getting done.
Yeah.
And the good side, the upside there is that we'll have him back for our key stretch against the 49ers and the Cowboys and that really formidable run we've got later in the year.
Mm-hmm.
So on to the good stuff. And there's an awful lot of it, to be honest with you, regarding our rookies in the Lions game. I'd like to start with Charbonnet, if that's all right. What were your key takeaways from Charbonnet's performance?
Yeah, I thought they're slowly increasing his workload, in my opinion. I saw him on the field a bit more, getting a bit more volume in the Lions game than he did in the Rams game. So that's a good sign with his uptick in volume. You know, it's all about building rapport and building trust and building chemistry with your quarterback and with your player caller, and knowing, can I trust him to run this play? Can I trust him to do this? Can Geno trust him to do all this? And they've look, when he got the ball in his hands, Charbonnet, I was impressed. He was bulldozing over some people. He was making guys miss. And he looks a real nasty guy to tackle in the open field once he gets loose. So I'm quietly confident and quietly excited about Zach Charbonnet, as I've always been.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I've been really happy with Charbonnet's inclusion week one and two is that they seem to be putting him out there with a purpose. It seems like if he's out there, they're intending to use him. If they're lining him up as a receiver, he will be a genuine option for Geno, running something that, you know, is likely, you know, whether he is there as a check down or whether, you know, whether he's to distract someone and give Njigba, you know, an extra yard on a route. You know, if Njigba's the hot route, they'll run Charbonnet into an area where it distracts someone and gives an extra yard to Njigba. It really seems to me like they're using him as a threat based on his genuine strengths. Not Ken Walker's not here. Go out there and be Ken Walker. You know, it seems really schemed up to get the best out of Charbonnet. Mm. And I think we saw on Sunday night, it was bulldozing runs up the gut and scheming stuff, you know, outside for him to receive. And I think that's superb. Once Geno knows where his strengths lie and, you know, the habits and things all kind of become known and everything, I think when Charbonnet's on the field, I think we'll start seeing some really cool sort of plays rather than just the same sort of stuff we see from other running backs. He's got a good skill set.
100%.
And I think the lid's off on that one now. I think we're going to see more and more out of him. Mm-hmm. Cameron Young was a lovely thing to see. I think we all kind of remember, I think he got 15 or 16 snaps, possibly more actually, in the end in that game. And I remember a screen that he blew up where he got out wide and he beat his man in the middle and got out wide and blew up a screen. And that for me was fantastic because he's not known for his athletic prowess and his closing speed, but the guy didn't get a single yard after he touched him. He swallowed him up and blew that up. And there was lots of little moments for Cameron Young, and obviously a player we've not seen much of in pre-season, so all a bit fresh for us. What were your takes? Did you like what you saw?
Yeah, my memory isn't vivid of Cameron Young's performance, but I'm getting flashbacks and I'm getting sort of memories coming back a little bit, and yeah, I can remember him being there again, just being around the football, finding the football well, and stuffing runners, and like you say, I can remember that screen pass now that you've talked about that. So yeah, I thought again another guy who is slowly getting worked more into the rotation and is looking like he's going to make the most of it when he's on the field and a big player kind of producer. He's a big guy as well. I like big guys in there. Big guy in the trench, hitting people. Just love to see it.
Yeah, he was always disruptive at the line in college, and at Mississippi, he was a guy that constantly managed to get penetration and beat his man at the line, but never really had that closing speed to show up on the stat sheet with TFLs and sacks. But what I saw from him against the Detroit Lions didn't really look like the Cameron Young that I'd seen before, because we saw a guy that was getting end product with the players. Maybe because the screen takes longer to put together and he'd recognised it, diagnosed it, closed in on it and blew it out of the water. Maybe that lends itself more to something he can do because it's just taken more time and it's given him time to get there. But he looked a force of nature in the snaps he got, and I love to see it, especially with Morris now, you know, out for the year. It's a good time for him to show up and make a statement. We've got a Jerick Reed play to talk about, at least one of them. He showed up big on special teams. You remember that big moment he had in, I think he was gunning, wasn't he, on a kick return?
Yes, he absolutely blew that up. I'm very surprised that wasn't a fumble. I thought instantly, it was one of them things where you see him running for it and you think this is a fumble. He's going to force a fumble here. And so fair play to the Lions. I can't remember who it was, but he held on to it well, did his job. He'll probably be special teams captain for the Lions next week. But no, it was it's exactly what we've kind of been hearing and seeing in the draft process. Once they drafted him, I think we mentioned it on the pod that after the draft, it sounded like Pete Carroll and John Schneider were the happiest to get him on the draft court. The way they were speaking about him in the press conferences after, they were absolutely over the moon that they'd found him and got him where they got him. So that whenever that, you know, when we've had a draft that has Devon Witherspoon in there, Jackson Smith and Jigba, all these guys that we knew were going to be studs anyway, to be raving as much as they were about Jerick Reed, some safety from where was he? Mexico. New Mexico. Like, I was thinking, well, they must be really confident that they've got a little gem here. And like you say, it takes time with these guys. A lot of the time that these gems, they do start off on special teams and make their name on special teams. Then they start getting on the field a bit more on defense, and then they run with it. They're same with Richard Sherman, Earl Thomas, all these guys that come. I'm not trying, by the way, I'm not putting them in that bracket yet. I'm just saying, you know, a lot of the top guys that you think
hopefully
of
one day.
Yeah, hopefully one day, but they all start on special teams, a lot of the defensive guys anyway. And that hit is a signifier of what we can maybe come to expect from Jerick Reed, that he's a tough lad, he's a hard hitter, and he has a, just some players have a knack for making big plays, and maybe this is another one. So I was really impressed with that, really impressed.
Yeah, me too. And I, talking about him coming from Mexico, or New Mexico, sorry, and the draft process, and John and Pete being so happy with him, it's quite interesting because, as you know, I put a fair amount of effort into profiling the talent going into the draft, and I pay special attention to guys at the Pro Bowl because we've got a penchant for taking guys out of the Pro Bowl that show up. He was a guy that showed up on the list of players that we'd interviewed, and that's another thing I pay close attention to when I'm trying to narrow down who we're going to pick. Did they play well at the Pro Bowl? Did we interview them? It narrows down all the data I've grabbed. He was interesting because he was not on my radar. And when I saw him pop up on the interview list, I went searching for more information so I could actually put together some kind of profile of what kind of player he was, so I could see, you know, what are they drafting here, or what are they looking at potentially drafting here? I couldn't work it out. I couldn't see for the life of me what an undersized safety or nickel corner would be doing in a hard hitting sort of high energy backfield for us. It just didn't look like a Cam. He doesn't look like a Cam Chancellor. He doesn't look like an Earl Thomas. He don't. You know, you look at it, but he has got some fire in him, you know, and that was what John, what was he called him? Was he called him an angry mouse, or he had a funny angry elf. He called him an angry elf. Yeah, he called him an angry elf, and that has started to really show up. Mm-hmm. So he's a competitor, and you know how John and Pete love a competitor. Yeah. So he showed us a bit of that. Also, JSN saw an uptick in production.
He did.
Yeah, he had a few more receptions in this game than prior. I can't remember exactly how many yards he went for. It was 40
he went
to 50?
34 with a 6.8 yard average.
Ah, yeah, okay. Yeah, I mean, how are you feeling about JSN?
Well, there was a tweet put out today from NFL Rookie Watch. I don't know whether you've seen it. Not connected to our Rookie Watch, by the way. That's just what they're called as well. But interestingly enough, Jackson Smith and Jigba is currently averaging 4.6 yards of separation on every route he's run so far this season. That's second best among all wide receivers and fourth best in the entire NFL. So when you look at it like that, okay, maybe he's not getting the ball in his hands as much as either we would like, or maybe he would like at this point. The proof is in the pudding that man kills you on route. He's getting open all the time, and it is with someone that talented and is getting it open and creating that much separation, I can only stress that it is just going to be a matter of time and patience before he gets the ball in his hands regularly, because you can't stop it, you can't defend against it, and if he's wide open all the time, you've got no other option but to throw it to him. So Gino, like we keep preaching on this Rookie Watch, sometimes it's just about a bit of patience, getting them sort of fitted into the scheme, building that rapport with Gino, you know, because he knows DK, he knows Lockett, he knows Fant, he knows this, he trusts them. I'm not saying he doesn't trust Njigba, but he does. But it's just that natural thing, I think, that once you've been working with Metcalf and Lockett all the time, you're naturally going to probably look for them first, even if the play design isn't that you know, JSN might be your first read. I think just that there must be some form of natural instinct in the human mind to think, right, where's DK, where's Lockett? And then he might think, oh, shit, I've got JSN now as well. Where's JSN? And he's wide open. And by this point, you know, it the play's over or whatever. So I think it's just a matter of time before JSN starts really going off in the Seahawks offense. because his route running ability is frightening, absolutely frightening.
Yeah, he's insane. The amount of separation he gets, and I had seen it. I made comment on that earlier, and it makes me wonder who the number one is, because if Cooper Kupp had been playing, I'd say it's probably Cooper Kupp.
That's interesting. That I'll try have a think.
Yeah, it was a lovely stat to read, but it's bugged me all day trying to think who the other guy is. Perhaps looking at the start of the season. That Hill has had at Dolphins. It seems like he's playing on a different pitch to the defense, defensive side of the ball. So, but yeah, that's superb to see. And I think the thing to remember is we're not a team so far with Geno that has gone to sort of shallower threats as primary. Like checkdowns and when you're going through your progressions, you're not necessarily going to say, oh, Jackson Smith and Jigba for four, I could get him on for a small gain there, I'll just do that. It's, you've got deep threats as well to check. I think by the time he gets to JSN, his route's kind of matured a little bit. You can get a good gain there, but I think as time goes on, there'll be more schemes set up so Geno can say, okay, well, in this scheme, if I hit JSN early, there's a really good potential for yards after catch. So rather than waiting for things to mature and then going to JSN, I think there'll be a better knowledge of, well, on this scheme, I'm going to hit JSN early because I know he can get to the next level and we'll rip off 10 to 15 here. So that will develop. And I think at that point, we'll start seeing 80 to 100 yard games rather than 30, 40, 50 from JSN.
100%, matter of time.
But it's not by any means a lack of his quality, because he's not dropped a ball for us yet in regular season games, and like you say, he is available and open a lot. So yeah, I think that's most of the guys we need to talk about, apart from probably the one we were most anticipating ever since we drafted him at 5 overall.
Oh no, sorry.
Well, no, we could. Yeah, I mean, we could very well talk about Oliver Teamy as well. But I think we'll touch on Spoon very quickly. There's a little bit of negative there on, and I think it's more so noticeable because of the flashy play that it was. But that flea flicker caught him cold. He took the cheese on the handoff. He abandoned his initial assignment to come and help set the edge, and then got absolutely blazed. Nearly caught up. It needs to be mentioned. He nearly recovered that space that he gave up, but he did essentially blow an assignment and give up a TD. But there was much more in the game to like, wasn't there? I mean, how did you feel about his big moments in the game? Because there were a few of them.
Excellent. I love him. I absolutely love it. I think he's so good. And please, Seahawks fans, if you know, let's not kill him over that flea flicker. Let's not kill him this season in terms of when he gives up something like that. He's going to every rookie cornerback, every cornerback in the league, the best cornerbacks in the Patrick Surtains, all these guys, they give up stuff. It's just natural. It's other than the quarterback, it's probably the hardest position to play in the NFL. You know, you're running backwards all the time. You don't know what's coming. Although you try and read the defense, you know, you can't go into the quarterback's mind. So it's such a hard position to play. And in what was effect is his first start, really. Well, it was his first start. He didn't play in week one. So that was his first taste of NFL action as well. And just don't kill him over it. Let him make those mistakes. And if he's still making those mistakes year three, year four, then you start to maybe ask questions. But for now, let's not kill him. Let's not get in his back. Let's look at the things he was absolutely spot on for in that game. That pass deflection on fourth down is as good as you see from any cornerback. If that's Surtain doing that, if that's Woolen doing that, anyone, Gardner, then the NFL's waxing lyrical. NFL fans are waxing lyrical. It's on highlight reels. All that. Then it's as good as you get. The tackle on that sort of on that check down that the Lions ran was as good as you get. That shoestring tackle is just perfect tackling technique in the opening field, which is something that, like say, us Seahawks fans and us on this pod have gone sort of deaf over, because we've shouted it that much that we just want someone to be able to tackle in the backfield in the secondary, tackling technique, preaching it to the hills. Well, Devon Witherspoon's tackling technique looked absolutely phenomenal already. So I think he's so good. He's going to learn, and like say Trey Brown went up to him after that flea flicker, and just said just forget about it, just put it to the back of your mind. It shit happens. It's the NFL. Everyone's good. Shit happens. He said something like you're too effing good of a player to let that bother you or anything. Just put it to your back in mind, and we focus on the next series. And he went out for the rest of the game, was excellent. So it didn't let him affect him. He looks like he's got a great mindset, a great sort of character. He doesn't beat himself up when something goes wrong. I think he's cerebral enough and intelligent enough to understand where he is as a player. He's going to make mistakes. He knows that. He's not going to beat himself up about it because he's confident. We know he's confident. We know how good he is. He knows how good he is. So I thought he was excellent, and I cannot wait to watch Devon Witherspoon for the rest of the season because he's just going to get better and better, people.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'll completely forgive him for the flea flicker. He took the cheese and came up to support on setting the edge. And I think when you look at the fact that we were missing Boye Mafe on that edge that game, and we'd struggled to set the edge there. And I think that we'd been targeted quite a few times in the running game off that edge, because I think they'd known that go Nwosu's side, he's going to gobble you up. Go that side, we've got far more chance. And I wouldn't be surprised, because Witherspoon he's always been a very smart player and a very instinctive player. He's seen the run go in that side and thought, I'm going to make another play over there. And I think that tackle you referenced, the shoestring tackle, was off that edge.
Pretty sure it was.
He blew up. So yeah. He'd already had big moments, successful moments, helping set that edge. As soon as he saw that ball go there again, he was thinking, I'm going to go and support. He got caught big time on that. And I wouldn't be surprised as well if they'd seen him fly up there to make that play and thought, okay, we're going to flea flick and we're going that side because the last time he flew up to support and we'll get him. Mm. And they did. So teams taking advantage of a player's aggressive traits, that isn't new. Mm. That's not a new concept.
It's not new, and it's an aggressive trait. But what I love and what it shows me more than anything that I've just said, he's so confident in his ability, and he's confident that he's going to trust what he sees on the player. And he, like you say, he diagnosed that player perfectly. There's no umming and ahhing, because you see sometimes with rookies, you know, they get caught in two minds. Do I go? Do I commit to it? I'm not sure. You know, let me back off a little bit and see if I got it right. And then if I got it right, then I know next time. But Witherspoon's like, no, I know this is what's happening. I'm just going to go and blow it up. And excellent, absolutely excellent.
Well, yeah, and I think at the end of the day, you look at a trick play, perfectly timed, perfectly targeted, perfectly executed. They got a touchdown out of it. You can give a round of applause to the Lions for the way they've drawn that up and who they've done it on. Well played. I don't think that sits too much with him. I think that there's a certain amount of plaudits that need to go to the offensive coordinator for drawing that up.
Mm-hmm. We won the game and it exposed him to a little bit of a learning curve, maybe. So win-win.
Yeah. I mean, if he's going to be instinctive and he's going to be sort of quick and twitchy and make reads and make plays, he's going to need to see the NFL. Mm-hmm. I mean, we can't ask a guy to be instinctive and make plays without, you know, knowing the league and his mm-hmm. opponents, you know. So mm-hmm. he's going to get so much better.
Oh, yes.
We saw Bobo... Doing an awful lot. He took his first reception, 3 yards. Not the splashiest play you'll see, but there were some huge involvements blocking in the run game for Charbonnet in particular. We saw Charbonnet getting probably about 5 yards more on that run than he should have got because of, you know, exemplary blocking from Jake Bobo. And I think as we go through the season, we're going to see so much selfless work from Jake Bobo, making space for others, blocking for others. I'm really impressed with Jake Bobo's team sort of ethic when it comes to doing the dirty work and everything.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I say, he's an undrafted free agent and he's just keen to make players whenever he gets on the football team. He's team first. And like you say, he's not sort of Just worried about what he can produce on the play getting open. No, he's fully committed to the blocking game, and he was excellent. And look, if he might not have to go for 700,000 yard receiving seasons, if we can find an undrafted free agent who becomes an outstanding blocking receiver, one of the best blocking receivers in the NFL, if that's his kind of ceiling, if that's what he can morph into as Bobo becomes one of the best sort of, you know, blocking receivers in the NFL in a few years' time, then what a find that is. What an asset to our offense that is.
We've already seen as well that he's a great deep threat as well in terms mm-hmm. of running routes fantastically well and getting separation that he probably doesn't have the right to get late in moves, and we'll see him get a lot of touchdowns as a wide receiver 3 or 4 in games chipping in as well. So love that, and I'm going to make reference to the fact that was not the biggest sort of assist for Charbonnet that he's had so far either. And I don't know whether you clocked this one, but I'll be able to find you the clip if you didn't. And that's probably going to be playing as you're watching this on YouTube right now. There was a moment in, I think it was against the Vikings, where Jake Bobo was running toward on the perimeter towards the corner. And the ball had already been handed off to Charbonnet, who was running to the right. And Jake Bobo, before he makes his move and goes vertical and runs a post, he looks back at the quarterback and then makes his move and goes. The cornerback completely buys it, thinking he's getting the ball on a deep route, turns and runs, and Charbonnet just eats all the space created.
So it was a little bit like, you remember last season when DK faked that? Walker ran in for the... Is it a bit like that?
Exactly like that, yeah. He sold it with the eyes. And then went, and that is so Jake Bobo. That is the skill set of a guy that doesn't have the physical traits to get space. So he has to make every single one of his fakes land perfectly every time. And on this occasion, he checked over his shoulder, pretended he'd met the eyes of Gino and gone for a post. Cornerback took the cheese, went with him, and Charbonnet just curved into the space perfectly. Linebacker ends up catching him, I think, or the safety, and he goes out of play. But he gets about 10 yards more than he should ever have done because Jake Bobo read it and sold it perfectly. So Bobo's been doing this for Charbonnet for a while, and long may it continue. Selfless, superb play from Bobo, as we've seen before. So the final section this week, we're gonna talk very briefly about some year two players. I think we're probably just going to talk very briefly about Kobe Bryant. We talked last week about Woolen. We've got some injuries in there as well. So, and Maffei we talked about as well. So we're going to talk about Kobe Bryant very briefly this week. The storyline this week was that one of the many storylines, actually, has been quite a few. Artie Burns been signed to the main roster. There's a couple of things I think have caused this. One, we've already elevated him twice in the first 2 weeks, and if we elevate him again, we are forced into signing him because you can't, after 3 elevations from the practice squad, you have to release or sign. So I think in a way we've been a little bit forced into it. However, you and I have both noticed, I think, that Artie Burns has seen quite a few snaps in the nickel, which had been a position occupied by Kobe Bryant. Do you think that the snaps are being shared between them? Or do you think that Kobe Bryant is perhaps showing some sort of growing pains in there?
I think, put it this way, I think starting in the nickel in week 3 is going to be Artie Burns. I don't think it's going to be Kobe Bryant. I think once the defense comes on the field for the first time, Artie Burns will be there instead of Kobe. It has been a few sort of growing pains since Kobe's come into the league. He's always shown flashes and signs of his ability. It's a debate that's raged on this podcast for since he's been here. Obviously, Pez loves Kobe Bryant, and our views have been somewhat conflicting in terms of, you know, he gets beat quite a lot, and he's not the quickest across the middle of the field and stuff like that. And I'm so torn on Kobe Bryant because I think there is a player there, but he. Certainly to start this season, I don't think he's looked great, and he hasn't been helping himself. And Pete Carroll and he doesn't sort of make these elevations without a meaning. He doesn't just waste practice squad elevations because, like you say, you can only make 3 and then he has to make a decision anyway. So if he's making a move there, that suggests to me that something is going to be happening in that position. And look, this might, in the long run, it might hurt right now, but this might actually be what Kobe Bryant needs right now, just to take him out the fire a little bit, take him out the limelight, still get him suited up for the game, and he'll still come on and make an appearance in the week three game against the Panthers, but just take that pressure off him a little bit. Artie Burns isn't an outstanding corner, but he's an experienced veteran. He's a former first-round pick, I think. So he knows the road, he knows the game, he's been around the block a bit, and he's a high floor kind of guy. He's a solid, dependable guy that he can learn from and just think, right, hang on, let me take a backseat view and let me see what Arcee does out there. I've been playing this position, let's see how Arcee plays it, and maybe he might pick up a few things, and Pete Carroll might say either week four or after the bye week, right, Kobe, what have you seen? You know, he's doing this, I've picked up this, that. Okay, yeah, that's what we've wanted, right. We're going to put you back in now. You're the starter again. Show us that you've, you know, picked up something. Show us how you've developed. So I think that's potentially on Pete Carroll's mind as well. And that might not be the worst thing for Kobe, just to take that pressure off him, because there are some sort of grumblings starting to appear from the fan base about Kobe's play. So just maybe take that pressure off him a little bit. Protect a young player.
Yeah, I think there's a... You said something in there which reminded me of the fact that Pete Carroll's done that a lot with defensive backs. He talks to them a lot about what did you see? What made you make that decision? Why did you do that rather than this? He's very quick to question someone on the theory of good cornerback play, whether they were involved in the snap or whether they're watching footage of the snap. And I think giving Kobe a bit of time off the pitch to kind of fight for his spot is a motivating factor, but I think also it's going to give Pete a perfect opportunity to give him some practical tuition and some theoretical tuition as well. I think that balance might be really good for him. I don't think hanging him out there to dry if he's not playing for every snap is ever going to be the solution. But I do like Pez. I know he's probably had his positive hat on, but like Pez, I think he's got a really good. He's certainly got a nose for the ball when it comes to forced fumbles. He is a playmaker, but it's as long as we play him in the nickel, it's never going to change for a bend but don't break kind of attitude where we slowly try and stop them scoring touchdowns while trying to make plays, and if we don't get them, eventually we just waste 3-4 minutes off the clock and a touchdown or a field goal happens. You know, we're never going to shut teams down over the middle if we keep allowing soft gains of 10 to 15 over the middle. It's just not going to happen. So I see the issue, but I see the potential.
Yeah 100%
is my take there. And then usually we talk about Trey Brown in here as well, because we consider him a year two player. However, we covered him fairly extensively on the main pod, didn't we, this week?
We did.
As he was a huge part of our win over the Lions. So we will not repeat ourselves. If you haven't heard the main pod, it's there on all of our usual streaming services for you to go and have a listen to. So I think that's pretty much it for Rookie Watch this week. We're hoping to see lots more big splashy plays and big contributions from our rookies and second years against the Panthers. I think there's a few of them in there that are going to have a really good game. So I can't wait to be sat here talking about another win next week. So I'm going to say go Hawks.
And I'm going to say go Hawks as well.
And we'll see you next week. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot, guys.